Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Raven's Real Spill Radio. This is your girl, Raven, the Serial Poet, coming to bring to y'all another awesome show. Tonight, we have embarked upon the 14th night of 31 Days of Horror. I mean, yo, we in a long stretch. We've been talking about stalkers at Walmart. We've been talking about stalkers and kidnappers. We've been talking about all sorts of things during these little scary stories and stuff like that. And I've been, you know, reading some of y'all inboxes and DMs and stuff like that. I'm glad y'all appreciate the show. To those of you who are not or have some slick shit to say about it, like I said before, don't have to listen. It's perfectly fine. But I hope your day went well. My day went amazing. If you want to call in, the number is 914-205-5813. That is 914-205-5813. We going to get into these stories. I'm not going to hold you.
My name is Anne. I only had one significant encounter with what I would call a spirit. It was back in the summer of 1994. My boyfriend, now my husband, and I were visiting his parents at their home in San Jose, Costa Rica. It was my first visit there, and I was very excited about our trip. We arrived on a wet and rainy afternoon in the middle of June, rainy season in Costa Rica. After chatting for a bit with my boyfriend's mother, both of us returned for a nap to our respective bedrooms. The room that I was given was towards the back of a very large house. Luckily for me, it connected my boyfriend's bedroom with a bathroom in between. Anyway, after a very good but short nap, I awoke to a figure standing over me. I never saw his face, and I say his because he was, unmistakably, a male presence. I blinked a few times, disoriented, and then ran to my boyfriend's room. I told him that I was never going to sleep in that room, especially by myself. Upon retelling this story to his mother and other family members, I was intrigued to learn that the house has been haunted for years. Since my husband's childhood, in fact, young children and other guests have reported weird visions, spirits, etc. Although this spirit seemed rather benign, there had been another entity in the house that was anything but friendly. My sister-in-law says that as a young girl, she was afraid of going up and down the stairs because a man or woman in a black cloak would chase after her with a long knife. When my in-laws finally acknowledged the presence of the spirit and had a priest come to exorcise the spirit, he found something strange. Behind a painting that my mother-in-law had, he found another painting of a witch slicing the neck of a goose. The painting had been recently purchased on a trip to Spain or France. Although I've never been sure why she bought this painting or stuck it behind this other painting, the priest said that the painting was associated with many hauntings. Do you know of this painting? And can these kind of hauntings occur through artwork? Also, I've not sensed nor seen the other spirit in the house. We now live fairly close to my in-laws, and my two girls play at their house often. They also have not said anything to me. Should I worry about these spirits, or have they moved on? Thanks for reading this. Any insight that you could give me would be greatly appreciated. I've never personally had a paranormal experience, but my older brother has, and this is his story. First, you have to know that my brother is a very practical person, an engineer in the Army to be exact. No one in my family really believes in ghosts, but I believe this story because he called me the next morning freaked out and said, "You're never going to believe me and think I'm crazy," but he lived in Texas, is in Iraq now, and his apartment complex was located on the same road as an old cemetery. This is exactly how he told me what happened. One night, he was laying in bed on his back, having trouble sleeping. He said the covers on his bed started getting tight as if they were being pulled down from both sides. The covers got so tight that he could barely breathe. He was wondering what was going on, but couldn't move. Then he got really hot, and then really cold. All of a sudden, he says he felt tingling, and then his mouth flew open, and a long rush of air was being forced out of his mouth. He said it didn't even feel like it was his own breath. He felt like it was coming from someone else. After that, the temperature returned to normal, and the covers loosened. Then he heard footsteps going towards the door of his bedroom, and then he heard the sound of a little child giggling. After that, he said he laid awake for hours, just scared, and trying to make sense of what had happened to him. To me, this sounds almost unbelievable. In fact, I'd never believe it if it wasn't my own brother, who would not make something like this up. He was really afraid when he told me, and I just have to believe that it happened. Now that I've read all the other stories on this website, I can definitely tell him he isn't crazy. Probably just had a ghostly encounter. I've had many ghost experiences through the 14 years I've been on this earth, but my first happened at the second house I lived in. My younger sister and I used to share a room. She's always rocked and made noise. Well, one night I was asleep, and she started crying and rocking in her crib. I couldn't stand the noise and needed my sleep for school the next day. So I grabbed my blanket and pillow, went into our living room, and crashed out on the couch. I awoke to a strange presence, something that was watching me. I opened my eyes, and across from me, on a brown chair, was a hazy yet solid figure. I can only describe him as well-dressed, a gray suit, a tie, buzz cut, and a mustache. He sort of looked like my great-grandfather, who had passed away. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, So I shut my eyes and opened them again. He was still there. He just sat there, staring back at me. After a while, I started to fall asleep again. I didn't have any nightmares, but I woke up to the door of our garage being opened. I looked around, and the figure was gone. I later discussed it with my parents. They said that weird stuff happened in that house to them too. They told me that they woke up to our back door being shut. They said that they thought it was me letting out the dog, but I was sound asleep in my bed. Out of all my experiences, this is one I can't forget. I found out later on about the history of the house. The old man who lived there before us died of a heart attack. He was kind to all the kids of the neighborhood. His wife had already passed on, and he was just waiting for his time to go. My dad was in the army in the 60s and 70s. After he was out of Vietnam, he was assigned to Okinawa in Japan to guard a chemical weapon storage there. Each night, him and four others would patrol the area. My dad and two others had guard dogs with them. One night, one of the other ones that was patrolling called for backup that he had spotted someone on top of one of the chemical weapons mounds. They were buried underground. The three with the dogs led the way, and as they approached the mound, the dogs would not go one more step. These were German shepherds who were mean and were never scared, and none of them would go past a certain point. They decided to tie them up and go ahead without them. The plan was, the guy with the shotgun will go back up the mound and flush the guy down the front towards the other three. As the guy headed up the back, this thing that they said was misty and dark-colored came running down the side. All of them started chasing after it. These are 19 to 20-year-old guys, and the thing they said was moving in slow motion and was pulling away from them. One of the guys yells at it to stop and pulls out his pistol and puts five shots right in the thing's back from point-blank range. It did not even faze it. They were headed towards a 10-foot fence with barbed wire on the top. The thing just glided up and over the top of it, like it was not even difficult. On the other side, there was a big money area, and by the time the patrol got around to it, the thing was gone, and there was no footprints. Okinawa was the site of a major battle in World War II, and this is one of only many experiences that he had while there. When we first moved into my house on Navajo in San Francisco, everything seemed normal. We all felt safe, and nothing seemed off or weird. In 2000, we started to encounter odd sightings and sounds at the house. My mom was doing laundry in the garage. Usually she only has one light on, but this time, she turned both of the garage lights on. As she was getting the clothes from the dryer, she saw a young teenage boy standing near a parked car we had inside. He slowly moved towards the garage door and disappeared. Later on, a few weeks passed. We didn't make much of it. One night, my sister was sleeping alone in her room. It was just me and her at home. I had been watching TV with the mute on, waiting for my parents to come home. I then saw the doorknob slowly move. I had the door locked, and I could look under, and no one was there. The following day, I woke up with bruises on my arm. After that, my sister felt and saw someone all in black, sitting at the edge of her bed. My brother had seen the same young boy my mom saw downstairs in the guest room we have. After my sister got married, she and her husband stayed with us. Every night, she recalled being awakened by someone. She would feel like someone was lying next to her on the opposite side of where her husband was, and touching her. It got so bad that we had to call a spirit channel person. She took the ghost away, but it wasn't over. Every night in my room, I see objects change from place, or things on the floor when I haven't touched anything. I've heard repeated voices calling my name, knocks on my door, someone walking in the kitchen, turning on the faucet. The last sighting I saw was at night. It was 10 p.m. No one was home but me. I was doing exercise, and I turned around, and I saw a woman standing at the doorway for my kitchen. As I winked and blinked, I saw the faucet running, and I felt a cold chill, when it was really hot weather that day, too. Whatever it was, it just won't leave till it gets its message across. Me and several friends and family members have come to believe that my house is haunted. These are a few of the incidents that have occurred in my home just over the past few months. My house is very cold and old, dates back to the 1800s. After a short time, we started to notice strange things happening in sounds, footsteps, whispering, thumps and slamming doors. Let me first say that these things are unnerving for other reasons than the obvious, that it is a ghost, but it is also frightening, because you can never be sure if it is only a ghost, or that someone is actually breaking into your home, which is something I fear more than the dead. The dead aren't going to steal your TV or kidnap your children. Most I can live with. I just hate it when they are so dang nosy. Okay, story time. My husband works third shift, so I am often alone at night in the house. When I can, I opt for company. Usually a family member will stay with me. One night, my husband was leaving for work, and with our children away, remember that part, I asked my cousin, Nicole, to stay with me. Eric, my hubby, was doing his usual routine of running about, getting ready, and saying his goodbyes. As he was leaving, he kissed me and said, "Bye, baby. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow morning," which I said right back to him. He said later, "Nicole," and she waved goodbye to him also. This was the normal run of things, except for the absence of our daughters, who are usually the last to say goodbye to their daddy. Eric exited the back door. A few seconds later, Nicole and I heard the voice of a child emanating from upstairs, saying, "Bye, Daddy." It was as clear as a bell, and as real as me or you. I looked over at Nicole, who was just staring ahead with a frozen look of fear on her face. I, of course, said, "Did you hear that?" Even though I knew she just did by the look on her face. She said, "Yeah, I did, but I don't want to talk about it until the morning." I think we were both a little freaked out for the rest of the night. We had known that the house was haunted, but we did not expect an actual interaction with them. My second experience happened just a few weeks ago. I told you my husband, Eric, works the late shift, so he basically sleeps during the day while our daughters are in school. On that particular day, I had a few errands to run, so my sister Maggie decided she would tag along, and we would go have lunch together. We were away from the house for about 3 hours, and when we arrived home, we entered the back door that leads to my kitchen, so we would not disturb my husband, who was fast asleep on the couch in our living room. As it happens, our kitchen is separated from the rest of my house by a big wooden swinging door that leads to our dining room. Now please note that when we shut the back door in the kitchen, the air from it will cause a suction and make the swinging door swing back and forth on its hinges. I'm used to seeing this happen so many times. As I said, we entered the back door, Maggie going in first and sitting some groceries down on the kitchen table. I came in last, sat down my things, and proceeded in shutting the door behind me. I automatically look up, as did Maggie, see the swinging door moving on its hinges. No biggie, I knew what caused it. But as the door swung outward, I saw a man standing about 6 inches away from the door frame. He then grabbed the door and held for about 3 seconds, and just stood there, looking back at me. I gasped, and he let the door go. I told Maggie to get out of the house, that I saw a man in the dining room, and without a phone in that room. There is no phone jack there due to the fact that my dog decided to eat it. I did the dumbest thing I could. I grabbed the nearest object, which was the frying pan. I then did what came natural, and holding the frying pan out in front of me, I pushed through the swinging door using every stealthy move I had ever seen on all those cop shows. I know it sounds funny now, but I was so scared that all I could think that there was someone in my house and my hubby was asleep on that couch. I pressed my back to the swinging door, so if anyone was standing behind, they would be flattened to the wall, in which case if they were, I guess I could have smacked them on with a frying pan, but who knows? I was running on pure adrenaline. I then ran to the living room, looking all directions at once, and woke my husband. We searched every room and found nothing. I told Eric exactly what the man looked like. I seen him plain as day. There was no trace of any forced entry of any kind. I've never been so terrified in all my life. It was like the man had vanished. I'm still not sure what to think of it. I've moved back to my hometown in Michigan after being away for many years. I have many stories to share, but this is a recent one that stands out. A fixture in my town was a burly guy named Bronco. Bronco was the typical bar bouncer type. Not surprisingly, this was his usual job. When I was younger, he used to drive his blue Ford Bronco. My family knew him well, as my mom ran the after-bar breakfast restaurant where all the party people congregated when the bars closed. Since I had moved away years before, I lost touch with the old party crowd. I did hear, however, that Bronco sold his beloved truck a few years after I moved. Anyway, it was June of 2002, I think, and I was driving on I-94. I saw Bronco's old blue truck driving on the opposite lane and mentioned it to the person who was in the car with me. I hadn't seen Bronco in a few years, but knew I would run into him at our upcoming Ventennian Festival and would mention the sighting to him then. A few nights before the Ventennian Festival, a friend and I went to a local bar to hear the band rehearse. As I walked into the place, I spied Bronco on the far side of the bar. I raised an eyebrow at him, and he acknowledged me in his cocky way from across the room. My friend and I went to look for a space to sit. Once we found a table, I told my friend that I saw Bronco and wanted to go say hi and tell him that I spotted his old truck the weeks before. As I made my way through the crowd to the bar, I heard the band dedicating a song. They were dedicating it to Bronco and said he had passed away. I was sure it was a joke. I finally made it to the bar where he was sitting. No one was there. I was absolutely perplexed. I walked around, trying to see where he went, to no avail. Finally, I questioned a ton of mutual friends, and they confirmed that he died of a heart attack or something the previous April. I was in total shock. He was only in his early 40s when he passed away, and one of those muscle-bound types. Even now, when I look back on this incident, I'm so amazed, because I saw him clear as day. Anyway, I thought it was pretty nice of him to remember me after he passed like that. I guess he knew I would appreciate the drama and the irony. About 3 years ago, I was at my grandpa's house, getting ready in the bathroom for school. I saw a woman walk down the hall towards the living room. I just thought it was my grandma, so I just brushed it off. Then a few moments later, I was looking out the door into the hallway, and I saw her again. I didn't recognize her. I ran into the living room screaming at the top of my lungs, "There's someone in the house! Hurry!" My grandpa took off into the house, searching for an intruder. He looked in every room, under the bed, and in the closets. He even looked in cabinets big enough for someone to hide. There was no one there. Later that day, he said an old boarding house used to be on the same spot as the house was built a long time ago. He said that I more than likely saw the woman who owned it. He took out his picture box and showed me an old book that he had the town's history in it. He turned to the page where I had information on the boarding house. As soon as I saw the picture of the owner, I was speechless. It took me a while, but after I caught my breath, I told my grandpa, "Oh my God, that's her." It seems that this place is only active when Christmas time comes around. In a very small town called White Wright, Texas, there is a very old house that now belongs to my uncle. The structure of the house is very stable. As a matter of fact, it has been lived in a lot longer than usual. It is now used as a storage by various family members of mine. The first experience was when I was 11, in 2 days before Christmas. It was late into the evening, and instead of my parents driving back home 27 miles, my grandparents offered their old house for us to stay the night in. It had been raining a little bit, and it didn't take long for the three-bedroom house to warm up, so we went to bed. I had two younger brothers. One of them was still a little baby, so he slept in the same room in a little crib that my grandmother put together for all the grandchildren. I was quite tired and almost fell asleep immediately when it started thundering and lightning. The first crash woke me up, and precisely, the loud crash, the outside scream, sounded as though someone had kicked the door. The house had a horseshoe-shaped porch, and at each end of the porch was a door to the house. Another door was for the living room. I screamed, and Mother came in. I had woken up my baby brother, she had claimed, but the thunder had woken him up. My mother picked my brother and took him with her to get him back to sleep. I tried to calm myself to go to sleep and convince myself that it was just a cat that got scared and jumped up against the door. Many times, though, to convince myself, I would check outside through the window of the door and then run back into the bed. I was starting to drift off again when another thunder blast went off and lightning followed. But what I saw next terrified me even more so because I saw a figure outside the window through the window curtain. I screamed out again and scrambled off the bed to look into the next bedroom and tried to tell my mom that someone was outside. She didn't believe me, and upon the suggestion of my father, I was escorted to the living room to sleep on the couch, which made the very front part of the porch even closer to me. All the windows were huge, and pretty much most of the living room was hallway, nothing but windows, but had dark brown curtains. The storm subsided a little bit for an hour or so, and I tried with everything to stamp down the fear that wouldn't let go of me, no matter how hard I tried to shake it off. I forced myself to close my eyes. At that moment, someone or something stepped onto the porch, stomping, and then started walking. I stepped into my parents' bedroom and asked my father if he heard the walking on the porch. He said it was the house settling. Look, I know it was just a kid, but settling of the house didn't sound like a heavy man with big boots either. I pleaded out of the window. I threatened. When I threatened, it would stop for a while, but start back up again. My last resort was praying to God for this to stop, to make whoever or whatever to go away. A few minutes later, the rain drizzled, and the walking faded away. It didn't stop immediately, just as though someone had stepped off the porch, but as though it was going away slowly. I fell asleep, and the morning came. I stepped out on the porch, and the whole porch was covered in mud clumps from one end of the porch to the other side. I talked with my aunt, and she told me that the only knowledge of the house was an old lady had lived there and that some neighbors had found her dead in her bed and her dog was missing, but that no one really cared about the dog anyhow, so the missing dog wasn't much thought of after the lady's burial. The second activity was when I had moved in with my aunt in the same house. She moved into the house a year before I moved in with her, and my cousins, of course. My parents and I had very considerable disagreements. Anyhow, as usual, just a little before Christmas, one of my cousins and I were just about to go to sleep on the couch in the living room, which is the center of the house, when my cousin rose up off the couch and told me that someone was standing right beside me. I got off the couch and made a mad dash to jump on the other side of the huge circular couch and jumped right beside her. At that precise moment that I jumped up, at the corner of my eye, I saw a very faint light move very fast in the center of the room, not on the wall or on the floor. Dishes were knocked over in the kitchen, and my aunt turned on all the lights. to explain this away so that we wouldn't be scared, and for all of us to get some sleep. My aunt told us that a cat had found its way into the house, and we scared it. The next morning, my aunt went and talked to my grandfather, and a few weeks later they were digging in the backyard and discovered a well and the remains of a dog. They filled the well with rock and concrete. The activity stopped. Later it was told to me that the Christmas before I moved in, my aunt was alone at home in the same house, and she had been watching TV. Someone stepped on the porch very heavily and tried to break into the house by first turning a doorknob and then trying to force themselves through the door. She threatened whoever, and they went away. The house is now being used as the family storage house, and whoever's friend of the family storage as well. It has not been lived in since my cousin Shane. The story I'm about to tell you is one of a disturbing nature. It absolutely chokes me up every time I tell it. If my grammar or language skills are not up to par, it's only because I'm caught up in the horrid memories of that night. It was New Year's Eve. My cousin and I waited for our girlfriends to arrive, as we were having a party that night. Yes, there was alcohol, and say what you want, but I know what I saw. The same thing we all saw. Anyway, later that night, we were all in my room, drinking and singing, just having fun. It was a party. Time passed, and more time passed, and it began to get late. Something startled my cousin's girlfriend. She quickly eased her mind with the thought that it was a household pet, a large dog, she thought. Little did she know, we had no pets. When she later confronted me about it, I told her just that. A little shaken, but mostly tired, she and my cousin went to lay down, leaving my girlfriend and I alone in my room. We watched TV for a while and just talked. We brought up how drunk my cousin's girlfriend must have been and laughed. Well, it wasn't funny long. As we sat there on the bed, half paying attention to the television, a thing sloughed across the floor in my room. We both sat stuck with fear, holding each other as tight as we could. When it got to our feet, it stopped, looked up at us, and almost smirked at our fear. We got a better look at it then. It was a bloody, bludgeoned mess. Seemed to be walking on nubs of his knees and elbows, and finally donned with a bashed-in skull. It made my poor girlfriend sick to her stomach. It continued its path to my closet and disappeared. We didn't sleep one second the whole night. If we hadn't all seen the godforsaken creature, I wouldn't have believed it myself. The next morning, the black lights were still on, music was still going, and bottles were everywhere. So I decided to clean up. When I moved the speakers back to the other wall, the black lights shone down on the wall. Streams upon splashes upon streams, upon handprints of bright green trails, were on my wall. It looked as if someone with green blood was bludgeoned to death. And I remember watching Forensic Files, and the luminol that they put on the surfaces to detect blood showed up green wherever blood was. This really choked me up. So finally, I went and asked my stepdad if he knew the house's history. His exact words were, "No. Why? Is the house haunted?" This is the first time I've ever publicly shared this story. I've only told two of my closest friends, and sadly, they looked at me like I had gone crazy. I've never even told my family this. It happened when I was very young. So that could be a reason why my friends looked at me like I was insane or something. But the weird thing is that the memory of these strange encounters has stuck with me until now. I don't even remember half of what happened to me at that early age, but this experience is so vivid still that it makes me believe that it actually happened. I was 5 years old, turning 6. I was living in the Providence in the Philippines, and my dad had come to visit me and my mom. He left 2 years earlier when he moved to California to find a job from the United States. And a year and a half later, I moved to the U.S. also. I have a big family with a lot of aunts, uncles, and cousins. My dad coming to visit was a big deal, so the whole family slept over my grandma's house. My cousins and aunts and uncles occupied the available rooms, so me, my mom, and dad had to sleep in the living room. The living room is on the ground level, so if you open the window, you'd be looking straight towards the street. It was around 10 p.m. that night when I fell asleep, and I don't know how long it had been until I woke up because I need to use the restroom. Some restrooms in the Philippines are located outside next to the house, and since I was only 5, I needed my mom or dad to accompany me. I sat up and asked myself, who should I wake up? As soon as my eyes darted from my mom to my dad, a figure caught my attention. He, or it, was tall, but I could make out a shape. It was a dark shape, but the scariest thing about it was that it was just there, leaning against the window, looking straight at me. I could make out 2 distinct points where its head was. Horns, maybe. I don't know. But how it could have opened the windows without waking anyone up, I thought, was kind of crazy. I didn't panic or anything. I just sat up and watched it looking at me for about a minute or two and then laid back down. I forgot that I had to use the bathroom. I pulled the covers over me and went back to sleep, hoping that I was still dreaming. Since I never really mentioned it to my parents, I can't be sure what it was. It was either a demonic figure, hence the pointed horns, or maybe a drunk relative who couldn't open the door, so he had to go through the window. Why did he stare at me, though? And shouldn't he have had a face and maybe some color to him? No, that figure was straight black, like a shadow. Some people might argue that I was dreaming, and if I was, then that was a pretty vivid dream. It still makes me remember what happened 16 years later. It gives me goosebumps every time I think about it. My ghost experience occurred at the trailer home that my family and I used to live. Several weird things have happened to us. Often, both my husband and I would be sitting on the couch watching TV, and the hallway light would be on, and out of the corner of our eye, we would see a shadow in the hallway that would briefly walk through the light, causing a second of darkness as if it was passing directly in front of the light bulb. My husband usually sleeps on our couch, because he prefers to have the room icy cold, so he'd sleep on the couch in front of the living room. One night, in the middle of the night, he hears someone stomping through the living room. The sound woke him from a deep sleep. He woke up yelling, thinking it was one of our kids, yet he found no one there. Another time he heard someone stomping once again, and then he heard the beads on their daughter's door shaking, like someone walked through them. He turned around to look at her daughter's door, and the beads were perfectly still. Several items, such as toys, clothes, and jewelry, would come up missing, only to reappear at a later time, long after you decided you would never see them again. My daughter once saw a figure in the hallway. My daughter and brother are very close, so one night, her brother and her made a tent in my son's room. This tent was right in the doorway of my son's room, and his room was down the hallway that my husband and I frequently saw shadows. My daughter said that she woke up in the middle of the night and saw a tall, thin man walk in front of the doorway as if he was walking towards the living room. At first, she assumed it was her father until she started thinking about it and realized her dad is a much larger man than what had just walked by the doorway. We have since moved out of this place, and we have not had any unusual experiences at our new home. When I was younger, probably around 12, I had what I later surmised may have been a paranormal experience. My brother and parents slept upstairs in our 1.5-story house in Waukesha, Wisconsin. One evening, I was awakened by one of my cats, meowing quickly about 5 times or so. Her last meow was cut short, and I then heard footsteps quickly approaching my room. The footsteps stopped, and I heard what sounded like heavy breathing, like one out of breath, just inside the doorway of the room, next to mine. The two doorways formed a corner. I was quite scared, as I thought someone was in my house. I also thought it could have been my brother, but didn't want to take any chances. I lay scared for a few hours, until I fell asleep. Before falling asleep, the breathing slowed and stopped, but I never heard anyone walk away. Years later, I took into account that my cat never meowed like that and would not likely stop so suddenly in mid-meow. She was fine, and I never saw any clues regarding this incident. Another time in that same house, it was an older house, probably from the 40s. I was walking down my hallway, and for a brief second, saw that the doorways were arched instead of the normal squared look. Imagination, who knows? My next incident took place when I was around 18 or 19. Two of my friends and I took a walk around my friend's neighborhood. The night was right out of a scary movie. Very dense fog. It stopped probably 10 or feet so above our head. We could make out the full moon if we looked closely, and sounds of geese echoed when they flew overhead. We walked to a small graveyard, of course, where one of my friends proceeded to run ahead of us. My other friend and I stopped at a rather young grave. The death date was only a couple of years previous to this incident. As soon as we stopped, I felt an energy, for lack of a better term, in my head and chest, but not quite physically there. More like in my mind and soul, if you will. This lasted a couple of minutes. About a half a second after the feeling stopped, my friend said, "Whoa, did you feel that?" He and I described the exact same feeling to each other. My other friend had been hiding to try and scare us, had looked back at us, and saw us standing in front of the grave with blank looks on our faces. My final incident happened to my wife and I. She was using the bathroom, and as soon as she was done, called to me. She said that she saw the wall bulge out, like a bubble, she stated. The bulge then moved up the wall and then sunk back in. The walls were plaster and solid. The bulge was about as big as a fist. Shortly after that, she had to go, I think to a function at church, leaving me home alone. A little while later, I saw something black fall from the ceiling out of the corner of my eye. I then heard what sounded like magazines slap on the dining room table, which was below the spot where I saw the black, falling thing. When I looked at the table, there were indeed magazines on it, which already had been there before I heard the sound. Nothing was disturbed, besides me. I've always had a fascination with things like this, but due to my beliefs, don't quite hold the same views as many of our readers or contributors regarding ghosts and spirits. Nonetheless, I like this site. I am a strong believer in ghosts, considering the fact that I used to see them a lot in my old house when I was a kid. When I tell people my stories, they do get very skeptical. So I'm going to tell you the story in which me and a lot of other people that proves that ghosts do exist, and it is unexplainable. I had found a stray cat back in 1996, and his name was Blackie. Anyhow, my grandma didn't like my cat at all, considering that she hated animals, and she used to kick him every chance she could. Of course, I would have a fit about it, and try to protect him every chance I got, but it was inevitable. So if Blackie was around her, she would kick him away, and as a result, every time Blackie saw my grandma, he would hiss and run underneath the table in the living room, all the while staring at my grandma and growling until she would leave. To make a long story short, I live in Illinois, and my grandma had taken a trip to see her daughter in New Jersey and ended up passing away there. And then the day finally came, when they finally brought her body to Illinois for her final funeral. Of course, my grandmother's body was at a funeral. On the very first day that her body had arrived in town, my cat began to act as if she was around again. It all started when me and my family were all sitting down in the living room with Blackie and getting prepared to go to the funeral, when all of a sudden, Blackie got up and looked at the doorway. His whole body arched as he hissed and ran underneath the table. The very hairs on my neck and back rose up, and I tried to ignore the thoughts of thinking that my grandma was in the very room with us. However, it was hard to ignore because he kept growling and hissing and watching something that we couldn't see. He would stare at the very chair she would sit in and hiss at it and avoid it as much as possible. Like I said, he was acting as though she was there, and his eyes would be moving about as if he was watching her walk around the room. He did this for exactly 3 days. He didn't stop until they finally shipped my grandma's body to her original home in Europe. After that, he never fussed over anything ever again. So, Blackie proved to me and my family that ghosts do exist. Hi, my name is Tariq, and this is my supernatural experience. It happened to me when I was about 5 or 6 years old. I seem to remember it was quite a sunny afternoon. Nothing particularly unusual about that day. My mother asked me to go upstairs and wake my father, who often took afternoon naps. I remember feeling quite lazy, and I could not really be bothered going all the way upstairs to attempt to wake my dad sleeping. However, my mom insisted so I did. I was about to walk up the stairs when I suddenly was overcome with fear, as what I had saw made no sense to me. There, at the top of the stairs, was the biggest dog I had ever seen in my life. It appeared to fill the whole space of the landing and was near the height of the ceiling. The dog appeared to be aggressive and was barking and growling so loud that it could have woken the dead. I was so shaken and scared that I just froze in the spot. I shouted for my mom. I said, "Mom, I can't go upstairs." And she told me not to be lazy. I told her, "No, there was this big dog at the top of the stairs and it would not let me pass." My mom came out to me, and she said, "Tariq, we do not even have a dog." Of course, this is what I already knew. I quickly told my mom to get over here and see what I was seeing, but by the time she arrived and looked up the stairs, it was gone. This perplexed me even more, and being the age I was, I couldn't even understand it. I started to doubt myself, wondering if I ever even saw it at all. And I trusted and believed in my mother. So if she didn't really see it, maybe I was just hallucinating and it really wasn't there. Obviously, the dog disappeared, and after a while, I forgot about it and never resurfaced again. However, these memories came back when I was about 12 years old, and I spoke to my mom about it. Looking back on it, I do believe I saw something paranormal. But any ideas on why my mom or dad could not see it or hear it, and why was the dog being so protective, beats me. I don't know, but it was sure a scary sight. It just sucks that I feel like I was the only one who had saw it, and it makes me crazy. But what can you do? I don't know. I recently had an experience that I can't explain, and decided to tell my story here. In June, my boyfriend Ian, our then 15-month-old twins, of course me as well, we all went to his family reunion. While we were there, we had a wonderful time meeting his family and getting to know everyone really well. We stayed at his father and stepmother's home with the immediate family. One night, while everyone was asleep, one of the girls started crying, most likely from being in a new place or losing her pacifier. I woke up, and still groggy, I sat up in the bed. I looked over to the crib. Next to the crib There was a little old woman standing there looking into the crypt. When I saw her, she didn't scare me, and I thought nothing of it. She looked at me, put her finger up to her mouth, kind of bent down, and whispered, "Shh." So I laid back down and fell back to sleep. Brianna slept through the rest of the night. The next morning, I got up and remembered what I saw. Not sure if I dreamt it or not, I pulled Ian away from the family and asked him if he had a picture of his grandmother. The family had spoken a lot of her the previous day at the reunion, but I had never met her. Ian was very close to her and was very upset at the time of her death. It would have been almost 9 years ago. They found one, and after I saw the picture, I felt this warmth, the only way I can describe it, and it filled my body. It was the lady I saw the night before. I wasn't sure if I should tell anyone, for fear of them thinking I was insane, but I decided to tell Ian. When I told him, he kind of gasped. Like I said, he was very close to his grandmother. I'm glad I told him. Well, later, as we were talking to the family, someone said, "Oh, it would have been so wonderful for her to be here and see all the family together." Speaking of the grandmother, Ian looked at me and asked me to tell everyone what I saw. I'm still new to this family and wouldn't want to be dubbed as the crazy one just yet. So I kept it to myself. Thanks for giving me a place to share this. In 1983, we moved into a home that had suddenly been vacated by the owners. The man had suffered a heart attack at the front door and died. His wife went into serious shock and suffered some emotional distress. After the funeral, her children decided to take her back to Missouri. I had personally known the couple in 1971, as I had lived in a house on the connecting street. Our backyards were contiguous. Mr. Williams had been the water superintendent for the city for many years. He was an upstanding citizen, a loving family man, and a friend to many people. Shortly after moving in, he got the feeling that Mr. Williams had never really left his home. At night, after everyone had turned in, footsteps could be heard throughout the home. It sounded like heavy footsteps stomping up and down the hall, outside the bedrooms. I would get up and check to see if the children were awake, and would find them sleeping soundly in their beds. Once in a while, doors would open up wide, as if someone was entering a room, and then the door would slam shut. One night, my wife at the time awoke to see the form of a man standing at the end of our bed. He woke up on her side and leaned over a little. She laid there terrified, knowing that I was very hard to wake up and that if this were a burglar, I would not suddenly spring into action against the intruder. She maintained her position and just peered through her eyelids. Suddenly, the figure just faded away. These occurrences persisted for about a month. One morning, at around 2:30 a.m., we were suddenly awakened by the bedroom door slamming open with a violent force. We were very tired of Mr. Williams' nightly tirades, and I was running on my last nerve. I got up and decided to try to talk with this confused soul. I addressed him as Mr. Williams and told him that he had suffered a heart attack and had died. I told him that his wife had gone to Missouri to live with his children. I told him that we were paying rent to his children to live in this house, and we worked hard for our money. I started to get angry with him and told him that if he wanted to rant and rave and stomp about the house, he needed to do it when we weren't there, as he was disturbing our sleep. If he continued, we would be forced to move, and his children would have to find other renters. I suggested he go to Missouri, because that is where he would find his wife. After that, we never heard from Mr. Williams again. In August of 1997, I was helping a friend deliver some things for a post-funeral reception that was to be held in the officers' quarters number 1 at Fort Concho in San Angelo, Texas. Fort Concho is the best preserved and reconstructed cavalry fort in America. This is where the Buffalo soldiers were stationed. It was very early in the morning, and we had to get the key to the building from the curator. We drove to the other side of the parade ground and parked the van. We went inside, and I took some things up to the staircase to the second floor, while my buddy worked on the first floor. I walked into the west bedroom upstairs, and immediately felt like I had just walked between two people that were standing shoulder to shoulder. I was walking into a tremendous field of static electricity. I had a cold sensation, and the hairs on my neck and arms stood straight out. I put the vase down that I was carrying and found myself compelled to say, "Excuse me." Then I proceeded to the east bedroom. When I entered the room, I saw a little girl out of the corner of my eye playing on the floor to my left. I placed the vase, and when I turned around, she faded away. A couple of days later, I was again with my friend. We stopped by the house of the lady, who was responsible for financing the restoration of Officer's Quarter Number 1. My friend mentioned that I had felt a presence and saw a little girl. I told her that I had seen her in the east bedroom, and she told me that a little girl had died in that very room. Maybe it was her parents that I felt in the west bedroom, or just someone else watching over her. A few months later, I had the opportunity to stop by the officer's quarters number 1 when it was open to the public. I was walking around, and a staff member volunteer came up and asked me what I thought of the building. I told her I thought it was haunted and repeated the story of the little girl. The lady took me into the dining room and pointed to a portrait on the wall. It was the same little girl I'd seen upstairs. I would first like to say, I was not a believer in ghosts or spirits. I was in the Navy at the time, and had been just transferred to Japan. My family and I arrived there in August of 91. I felt very lucky, because the Navy had just opened Hario, a new housing complex, about 9 miles from the Naval base. This meant that my family and I would not have to live off base. My wife and I were taken out to the Hario to pick out a house. Being newly opened, we basically had the pick of the litter. My wife and I chose a nice 3-bedroom townhouse in the center of the housing complex. We moved in within 3 days and began to settle down. Nothing much happened for the first month or two. Then one night, my daughter, who was 3 at the time, started waking up at night crying. She would point at the wall and tell me to make the snake lady go away. This happened about once a week. Of course, I thought she was just having bad dreams. We would let her sleep in her bed when this happened. My wife became pregnant at the time, and we were allowed to move into a 4-bedroom house. I was hoping this move would solve the snake lady problem. As we moved into the new house, I assured her the snake lady was gone forever. Boy, was I wrong. It was about 2 weeks before our encounters with the snake lady started again. This time my wife and I could actually feel some sort of electrical charge throughout the house. These encounters intensified, and my daughter started to see more and more apparitions. She would tell me that the snake lady wanted to take her away. I, being a skeptic, thought the electrical charge was sort of funny, but never gave much thought about my daughter's nightmare being real. Then one night, my wife and I were awakened by my daughter, screaming at the top of her lungs. We rushed into her room to find her pressed against the far wall, her feet approximately 1 foot off the ground. My wife and I both grabbed her arms, and with one of my feet pressed against the wall, I pulled with all my might. She wouldn't budge.
I'm not a small man. 5'10", 191 pounds, and I work out all the time. I could not get her off the wall. All the while she was screaming that the snake lady wanted to take her away. Scared to death, I started praying in my head. My daughter started to slide down the wall, and she fell into our arms. I don't know what it was, but I believe there is something out there that we don't know about. The next day, I blessed every room in the house with olive oil. This seemed to do the trick, because my daughter never had another experience. My wife is Japanese, and she did some investigating of the area's history. Harry O was once an internment camp for the sick and dying Japanese soldiers of World War II. There is a shrine just outside the back gate for the soldiers that died there. And that's what we found out. Thanks for reading. It's funny, really, because I've been reading your site for quite some time and have marveled over the experiences people have had, but never, ever thought I would be emailing you my story. This experience is mainly my two friends. I experienced it firsthand last night. They live in RAF, Royal Air Force Quarters, in Middlesex in England, and have never really mentioned anything before. A couple of weeks ago, Susie and I were chatting about various things when the subject of ghosts came up. Funny enough, the handprints have come back since Elena was born, said Susie. Handprints? What handprints? I replied. It seems that since they moved in over 3 years ago, they've had various things happen. So she took me upstairs, and there, clear as day, was a set of huge handprints on the wall, just above their bed. Apparently, she has tried everything to get rid of them, and they disappeared when she was pregnant. As soon as the baby was born, they came back, and when I saw Susie and Jay last night, they casually informed me that the handprints had moved. By now, I was getting quite spooked out. We went outside for a cigarette, with one of the music channels on the TV playing. When we came back in, the channel had changed to some gruesome true murder documentary. The hairs on the back of my neck were standing on edge at this stage, and it took Susie a good 5 minutes to change the channel back. Also, they both watched a candle that stood on top of the telly, very casually move from the middle, and drop off at the end. Things have been moved around, never hidden, and the TV also turns on and off. Susie and Jay were very relaxed about this, and the ghost obviously means them no harm. Last night, it was Susie, Jay, and me, and they told me what happened last Sunday. Apparently, Susie had gone up to change Elena, and had set out her pajamas and nappy out in the changing mat in the bedroom. She was bathing Elena and thought that perhaps she could use one of the smaller nappies instead of the big one that she had pulled out. When she went back into the bedroom, the pajamas and the big nappy had been thrown onto the chair, and in a perfect arc were three of the smaller nappies on the changing mat. Poor Jay got it right in the neck for that, until he explained that he hadn't been upstairs at all. Again, the hairs on my neck were standing on end, and when I had to go upstairs to use their toilet, Susie had to come with me. We then went out for a cigarette, and as we were sitting there, I saw the shadow of someone walking to the kitchen. Didn't think anything of it until I realized that we were all sitting outside. I told them, and Susie said that she sees shadows out of the corner of her eye all the time. We then went back in, and I was sitting on the sofa next to Susie, talking to Jay, when I noticed that she was staring at something right behind her. I asked what she was looking at, but she said nothing at first, knowing how freaked out I was getting. She then began to tell me that she noticed a transparent man with an axe lodged into his forehead, casually move from the room we were in and into the kitchen, then disappear. She had told me that when she was alone in the living room another time, that she also saw a man sitting down at the kitchen table, as if he was writing on a piece of paper, then disappear shortly after. Apparently, they are not the only ones to experience things. It seems that quite a few people in the row of houses had strange things happen, and the couple on end have seen a shadowy figure. She asked me to babysit Elena next week. Must admit, not too keen on having the extra company, though. When I was about 10 years old, my family lived with my great-grandmother and me, and my brother had to sleep in the basement. Half was for storage, half was an extra room. So one night, at like 3, I had to walk to the top floor to take a pee. On my way down, I hear the voice of a little girl say goodbye. Then I noticed that same voice, and it said die. I immediately freaked out and ran back into my room, absolutely terrified. There was another incident with my brother. He was in the basement, and he heard the same voice coming up the stairs from it. It said die as well. And he turned back, looked down the stairs, and the apparition of a girl was standing right there, and then materialized and disappeared in an instant. When I was 15, we moved out to New Jersey. When I was 16, I heard horribly violent screaming. It sounded like a woman, and it sounded like it was coming from behind me. 3 days later, my brother, he was 19. He heard the same screaming coming from our bedroom closet. Nowadays, we don't hear any mysterious voices, but we both know they had to be ghosts. And not only that, they had to be evil. And I don't want to experience that ever again. I'm sure my brother doesn't want to either. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Phantoms. If you just listened to this compilation, you listen to the greatest stories of the past month. That's right, the greatest collection of stories, a retelling of stories that you heard this past month. Actually, it's not really a retelling. It's just I put everything together because I knew you guys like compilations. So there you go, guys. No, but really, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this compilation edition of Phantom of Darkness Horror Narrations. I hope you really enjoyed your stay, and I hope you come back again. I encourage you guys to comment, like, share, and subscribe because I hit 20K. Well, I'm assuming I hit 20K at some point during this upload. So thank you so much, guys, for just staying, you know, like very supportive of me and actually just doing what you guys do and just, you know, enjoying my awkward self and whatnot. So thank you guys so much. Thank you. That's all I'm going to really say before I just make no sense at all. But guys, thank you so much. I love you guys, and I'll see you in the next.
This was about 25 years ago when I was a young teen, 13 or 14. I'm a female and I'm 38 now. I was dating someone in a rough part of my town, in the UK, and had walked down to his house to hang out. I had left his house to go home around 4 or 5 p.m. and was walking through a small wooded area when something told me to look behind me. I looked behind me to see a guy following me carrying a baseball bat. I started walking faster and faster, but he kept pace with me, and just remained carrying his bat over his shoulder, like he was gonna swing it. I confronted him once we were out of the wooded area, and asked him what he wanted, but he just stared at me blankly, so I told him to straight up stop following me. I started walking off in the rather quick speed, and he continued to follow me. I lived in a very small town, but it had a number of houses that I could stop at. I knocked on several houses on my route home, but no one was answering, and I didn't want to creep knowing where I lived, so I just kept walking around and going down alleys into people's gardens but he'd be waiting for me when I thought I evaded him. I ended up going back to my house, hoping that my dad would be home so that he could deal with this creep. But when I got home, my dad wasn't home. I told my mom about it, and she looked out the window. He was there, but all he did was nod his head to her, and then he walked off. I told my boyfriend about the incident, and he went mental over it and asked around to see who it could have been. He found out who it was, gave the guy a polite warning, and started walking me home just in case. I never saw that stalker again. My boyfriend and I split because of distance as I moved to another city when I finished high school. We do still talk occasionally. He's happily married with 4 kids now, and I'm a single parent to 3 kids. It still gives me a shiver down my spine when I think about it, though. So this is a repost of a story from March 2019, but I just went to court to testify against him today, so I figured I might as well let you have the whole story. So I lived in a town with 60,000 people, and I've been living and working there for 1.5 years. I don't know many people here, as I work all day and have schoolwork in my free time. Because of this, I've been trying to meet new people and found a Facebook group wanting to hang out. One was suggesting a pre-party before going out, and we were just 6 girls in total. At around 3 a.m., 3 of us decided to go home. One took a taxi, and the other one lives like 3 minutes away from me, so we walked. We were talking, laughing for a few minutes before she went inside, and I started to walk home, rather happy, but still a bit drunk. I suddenly noticed footsteps and got a bit paranoid, as you do being a woman in your early 20s, walking home in the middle of the night. 50 meters further ahead is a public swimming pool, and they still have the lights on. So I decided to leave the sidewalk, because usually people are just on their way home themselves, and will just keep walking. Not in this case, though. As I reached the entrance with all the lights, I turned around, and this guy was literally 3 steps behind me. Black male, 35 to 40, slim, with a head strangely small compared to his body, little to no hair, like 5'9", and with creepy, nearly white eyes that stood out next to his dark complexion. I asked him why he was following me, and he just mumbled something I couldn't make out. He could have been an immigrant, though, so maybe he didn't know Danish. I told him that he shouldn't be following me, and that I'd like him to keep going, but he gave me no response. I then told him that I didn't like being followed, and to please move on. He just smiled a creepy smile, and out of nowhere grabbed my hair on the back of my head, and pulled me towards him harder than I thought was possible for his size. I fell on top of him, and he got knocked out when his head hit the pavement. I ran across the parking lot to a road at a safe distance when I called 112 while still keeping an eye on him. Really wanted to just run home, but I was also terrified of me landing on him might have killed him or whatever. He attempted to get up a few times, and I was about to run, but I saw the lights from the ambulance coming down the road. So I stayed, and one of them came to check up on me while we waited for the police to arrive. I'm fine. I just have a sore scalp and a bruise on my left arm where I landed on him, but I'm sure he got the biggest headache ever. Karma is a bitch, and here I thought I had ran out of dumb luck a long time ago. Edit. I think I saw him at work yesterday. I work at a pharmacy, so if it was him, I hope he just came in for something for that headache. I looked over the camera footage, and literally the only thing that didn't make it seem like it was him was that he had very dark eyes. But I guess color context is always an option. Second edit. Passed him today on my way home from a run. I was literally 100 meters from my flat, in another direction, compared to the swimming pool. I tried not to make eye contact, or look too much, in his direction. But he was wearing the same exact outfit. He didn't follow me, but I just hope that means that he didn't remember how I looked. Third edit. Never mind. I walked past him today on the street outside the pharmacy, as a colleague and I were going to grab some lunch. When I realized it was him, I just looked at my colleague and pretended to be very much into our conversation, but I could feel him staring at me the whole time. I waited a little longer than I usually would to have a second look, and he was staring. I felt like I got busted or something, and like I've just confirmed to him that I was a girl that he attacked. It's honestly a strange feeling because my feelings are currently switching between paranoid, scared, and angry. More than anything, I really want to punch him in his face for making me feel so unsafe. I doubt that would end well for me though. December 2020. Guess it's time for another edit, in case people are still wondering what happened with the case. So apparently, he has a few different charges, and today they decided to have me come to court as a witness. Don't know all the charges, but I'm not allowed to know until he's being sentenced, which might take a while. Anyway, they read aloud from the police report, and I'm both confused and annoyed, as it doesn't sound like what happened at all. They said that he was drunk and sat on the pillar near me, and lovely attempted to stroke my hair, which I didn't like, then fell and bumped his head and got knocked out, and that I had left and called the ambulance for him. Like, literally, what the fuck? Also found out that he probably didn't understand me that evening, as he needed a translator today. But I still feel kind of proud that I was brave enough to confront him with the fact that he was following me, and to tell him to keep going. At least something positive came out of it. So for background, I used to sleep in a boarding school while I attended high school. That night, they asked us to be in front of the school at 4 a.m. to take the bus that would have taken us to the airport. I have asked my mother if she could bring me there, but she wasn't comfortable going into the city with the car at night, and neither was I walking by myself in an unknown city, but I guess she didn't care that much. So it was around 3:40 in the morning. I hadn't slept for shit because I had bad pizza, indigestion. I had spent the last 5 hours holding my stomach on my bed, covered in sweat. So yeah, that night didn't start off well, but I decided to go take the bus anyways. I didn't want to miss the big trip, although the idea of getting on a plane scared me more than anything. I got up, took my luggage and backpack, and started going towards the city center. The streets were completely empty. Every now and again, a car would pass the street, but no one else was around. I was sprinting down the street where the rehabilitation home was. I have nothing against rehabilitation, but call it prejudice. I didn't want to meet anyone who had something to do with drugs and alcohol at 4 a.m. I managed to get in front of the school all in one piece, and there was not a soul around. Where were my classmates? I sat on the bench and started playing with my hands. Sure enough, luck was never a thing. I started hearing some movement behind me. I turned, and the man was slowly crossing the plaza, headed towards me. I ignored him and kept looking at my hands nervously. He definitely was approaching me in a very slow, calm walk. He was wearing a windproof jacket, had gray hair, a wild afro, and a beard. Some of his teeth were missing. He had a friendly smile. "Hey, you brother." I covered my face between my neck and my jacket and my hood. Hey, dude. I'm sorry to bother you, but you see, I need some money. Some money, yeah? As soon as his hand touched my shoulder, I jumped up and back down. He took me by my shoulders as if we were long-lost friends and proceeded. "I need some money for fries. There's a van that sells them, there, down the street. I just need a few coins for fries." There was in fact a van that sold all kinds of fried and bakery sort of food. The thing is, they're not open before 9 a.m., and it was 4 a.m. The smell of liquor on his breath made me panic. He could have easily punched me and robbed me. He didn't look like a violent guy, but I didn't know what to expect. I thought quickly. I had some spare money. I'd give him some, as I didn't want to piss him off. I told him that I didn't have any cash on me because I was going to the airport, but that I had some coins in my pocket that I would be glad to give him. This prevented him of seeing my wallet, and it sounded like a friendly compromise. He seemed grateful. He took the few coins I had for my coffee. The thing is, it was not over, and it got weirder for both of us. He started overthanking me, a row of thank yous and kind words, and, "I need to reward you." He was heaving his hands over me, and I didn't know what to do. I was so overwhelmed. I hugged him, and said that it was no problem. I locked my hands after a few pats on his back, and backed up. Okay, what the fuck just happened? I anxiously looked around to spot a classmate at the end of the road, with what I remember being her sister. After a while, they noticed me too, but didn't do anything, just stared. The guy thanked me again and said that he needed to show me one more thing, then grabbed my arm and dragged me a few steps. I pointed my feet at the ground, losing my confidence and looking friendly. "Please, I gave you money already. You asked for money, and I just gave it to you. Now I have stuff to do." He pulled me another time, then let go of my arm and said that he wanted to reward me, and that I will see. He then asked me to stay still and wait for him to come back. He then left. A couple of my classmates came the next minute. I was still shocked. I didn't know what the fuck that man wanted, and I was anxious I would see him turning the corner. I then laughed it off with some friends, trying to cope with whatever had happened. A few laughed in disbelief, and one girl took me to the side and asked if I was okay. I wasn't really sure, and she knew it. The classmate I saw at the end of the street said that she saw the man dragging me, and if he would have done something, she would have intervened. I was, and still am pissed off at her. This man was looking for some booze or whatever, and probably wouldn't have hurt me. But what if he had a knife, if he punched me, if he robbed me, if he managed to drag me away from the street? It was already time to intervene, and I can't help thinking that she was just being a coward, and I will never forget. This happened years ago, when I was 16 years old. I was walking home and it was around midnight. There were no people around me besides this very short dude that was walking right behind me. At first, I thought nothing of it until I heard him speaking. No other voice, just the one. But he could have been talking on the phone, right? I get this very weird feeling that something isn't right. So I turn around, and sure enough, he was speaking to me. I can't make out what he's saying because he was speaking another language. My best bet was to cross the street, but he did as well. We repeated the street crossing a couple times until we got to my block. Now, my street is a very little narrow street that is part of the old part of town, and it's very dark. If I go into it, he could very possibly hurt me, and no one would be there to help. So I decide to walk a little bit further, where there's a bakery that's 24/7, and it's always packed with people. I stop right in front of it and act like I'm waiting for someone to come out. The guy sees this, and he walks into the bakery and starts looking around, and I finally see him under the bakery lights. He looked disturbed and very dirty. He was short, maybe around 5'2". He was wearing some clothes that were dirty and worn out, and by the look of the customers, I could tell that he smelled very bad. I assume he decided not to be suspicious, and he walked out and starts walking away from me. He didn't know that my street was a couple steps behind me, and I guess he thought once he left, I would keep walking in the same direction. I saw him hiding behind a tree not very far from me. I take this opportunity and slowly start walking backwards to where the street starts, never turning my back to where he is. This was my time to get a little bit ahead. So I start running for my life until I get to my house. I lock the doors with all the lights turned off, and I peek out the window. He is running and looking everywhere, trying to find where I went. I don't even want to imagine what would have happened if I hadn't reacted the way I did. But anyways, I have more stories similar to this, because being a woman in my country is very unsafe. Probably the wildest thing that has ever happened to me with a complete stranger. Now, this encounter was not in person, just to note that. I was 14 when this happened, and the man in question was in his mid-30s. I had a large friend group at the time, but out of the 10 people in it, I was only really friends with one of them. All the other ones were his friends, but they were always around. This particular day, one of his friends asked me if he could use my phone to call his coworker because he needed to tell him that he wasn't going to make it to work. I agreed and handed him my phone without thinking twice about it. He says his coworker isn't picking up and gives me back my phone. A couple hours later, my phone rings and I pick up. I don't recognize the voice, but the caller says I called him. I quickly realize what it was. I tell him my friend's name and that he called. The caller thanks me and hangs up. I thought that would be the end of it, But boy, I was wrong. Almost right away, I started getting texts from this number, telling me my voice sounded sexy. I just ignored all of them. The next day, I get a text from him.
Do you not want to talk to me?
I responded with a simple no. He replies,
Well, if you don't want to text me, Sarah, then I could just come by.
He knew my address and my name. I am terrified at this point, so I asked my friend if he gave any information about me to his coworker. He tells me that the guy asked him whose phone he called from, and he gave him my name. He asked him if I lived close, and he gave him my actual address. My friend also mentions his age when I told him that he's texting me, but he said that I'm overreacting and that a 30-year-old wouldn't even bother with me. So I text him back, saying that if he has that information on me, he must know my age too, right? He says he doesn't mind my age, as long as I don't. What follows is a month of constant calls every single day. He would get angry if I didn't pick up and start texting me nasty things and calling me names. Please don't judge me for not calling the police or telling my parents. I was only 14 and scared that he would hurt me or my family. One day it all came to an explosion that was building up for months. He kept calling my phone until my younger brother got annoyed and answered it, telling him to leave me alone. He had no idea it was a stalker. I just told him it was some random person calling me. He then sent me a couple texts telling me to get ready because he was going to kill me and my brother for speaking to him like that. I went outside to cry, and that's when my neighbor saw me crying. He was older than me, but his brothers were the same age. He asked me why I was crying, and I told him everything. I just couldn't keep it in any longer. He was calm and told me to give him the guy's number, which I did. About 15 minutes later, my phone started blowing up with texts. He was calling me a
whore.
He then said,
You have the nerve to send the bastard that you're having sex with and have them call me?
He was extremely angry. He somehow knew where I was going the next day. It was something I planned for months with my friends. He told me that that was where he would kill me, and I would pay for being such a little bitch. I still went because we had been planning it for months. Thankfully, my neighbor suggested to go with me and keep a distance just in case the threats were real. They weren't. He never showed up that day, and I'm so thankful he didn't. That was the end of the calls and texts. To this day, I'm still terrified that he will somehow see me outside and possibly hurt me. One phone call ruined many months for me. Okay, so this took place a long time ago. I don't remember exactly how old I was, but I was probably between 7 and 9. My family and I were all queued up at the bus stop when this guy approaches us asking for money. He says something about he hasn't eaten in a while and that he doesn't have a single cent on him. This is pretty normal where I live, so we weren't exactly freaked out or anything at the time. So my mom dug her hand in her purse and handed him some cash and wished him well. The adults returned to their conversation, but I noticed that he hadn't left. What's weird is that we were in the middle of the queue, so it couldn't have been that he was just queuing up after us. Everyone else eventually notices this and tries not to acknowledge whatever this was because, I guess, everyone probably just assumed that he wasn't exactly sane at this point. When the bus arrived, we all hopped on, and me being the child I was, I ran all the way to the back to sit alone. Those seats were considered the best seats. Then I see the same guy board the bus and walk in my direction. I immediately grabbed my grocery bag and placed it on the seat next to me because I didn't want him to sit there. Because I had a feeling he would. Sure enough, he stops right next to me and just stares down at me. At this point, I was completely creeped out, mainly because I had no idea what he wanted. Everyone began to turn and stare, so I lifted the grocery bag and he immediately plunges down right next to me. I looked through the window throughout the whole trip, which wasn't long, about 10 minutes. I was seated on the inside next to the window. So when it was my stop, he had to either get up or turn his body to let me slide through to get out. Surprisingly, that's exactly what he did when we got to our stop. Thank God he hadn't followed us then. Another thing I noticed that he didn't have a card and he didn't pay for the fare when he got on the bus, and somehow got away with it. Last night, I was scared out of my mind. As I was on my way home, a man came up to me and started talking to me. He said something along the lines of, "Hey, beautiful," and whatnot. I replied back, "Get away from me." I then noticed he had a cup of alcohol in his hand, and I immediately regretted saying anything. He turned aggressive right away and proceeded to call me a stupid dumb white bitch and to get the fuck out of so-and-so. I diagonally crossed the street, and he continued down and crossed another street, but he kept screaming at me, saying that I'm a dumb bitch and that he was going to beat my ass and mess me up. Being a dummy and having too much pride, I yelled back, "Suck my dick and shut the fuck up." Clearly, I should have not aggravated him more, but it was in the heat of the moment. There were a few people around, so I felt okay, and he was walking away. But when I turned the street, all the other people were gone. That's when he started following me. I could hear him screaming slurs behind me and his footsteps stomping down the pavement. I was so scared. I started to speed up my walking, but I didn't want him to know that I realized that he was right behind me. I thought to knock on a neighbor's door for help, but I was too afraid. I called my mom and started crying on the phone because I didn't know what would happen. She thought I was pranking her. I could hear him getting closer, and I grabbed my keys and bolted to my front door. Both of my hands were shaking so bad that I couldn't even unlock it. I started banging on it for someone to open it, and finally they did. I got in and fell on the hallway floor, just crying. I looked up and saw a shadow at the door and started screaming my ass off, only to realize it was my roommate checking to see what happened. I felt so much relief in that moment. I'm really scared to leave my house now because he knows where I live. I just hope he was too drunk to remember anything. I feel really traumatized. This is a story about the time I had a full-blown stalker, and everyone knew and just pretended it was fine. When I was 16, I moved into a new apartment. It was a huge apartment complex. I had previously only lived in a very rural area in the middle of nowhere. So one night, I decided to get changed while dancing in front of my full wall window at night. The window acted like a mirror due to the light inside and the darkness outside. So I did an entire strip tease in front of that thing. Yes, I was stupid. When I was done, I looked out my window for whatever reason, and I saw a silhouette of a man standing in his window across the street on a higher floor. I shut my blinds, but thought nothing of it. A few days later, I get a call. The person tells me that he loves me. He knows my name, my mom's name, my address, what school I went to, and obviously my phone number. He knew everything. I told my mom about the stripping incident and about the phone call. She brushed it off. One time, my boyfriend was over, and the stalker called me crying, asking how I could do this to him. When I went away for a weekend, he called me hundreds of times a day. If I answered, he'd say nothing. His silhouette was always watching me. Somehow, instead of panicking about this, my boyfriend, mom, and even me made jokes about it. None of us really cared too much about it. One day, after 6 months of this, the calls just stopped. I never saw him in his window again. It just ended. But this could have ended so badly for me. And honestly, I wonder what the fuck my mom was thinking about ignoring something so serious. He could have shown up at my door at any time. He knew exactly where I was. Thinking back on it, it was probably the most dangerous situation I've ever been in. I was just thinking about this for some reason, and thought this is the kind of stuff that would fit on the subreddit. Many people might not think it's scary enough, but to me, it's definitely a creepy encounter. This happened when I was in secondary school, in the UK. I was probably about 12 or 13. I lived in a pretty safe neighborhood from what I can remember, but the town itself has definitely taken a turn for the worse in the past few years. To get home from school, I would sometimes walk with some of my friends going the same way. We would walk through a big busy park where people would walk their dogs and where children would sit and talk on the swings after school. On this particular day, I was walking home with a friend and her younger brother, who was a year below us, if I'm remembering correctly. I'm not sure exactly how it transpired, but we were approached by a woman who was obviously completely spaced out on some kind of drug. I probably didn't realize this at the time, because I was quite naive when I was younger. The woman had probably said something along the lines of asking us for money. But before I knew it, my friend and her brother had started running away, shouting, screaming, and laughing. I quickly followed, as I didn't want to be left behind with this random woman. We ran down the street, and after a second or two, we realized that the woman was now chasing us. She was angrily screaming at us. My house was nearby, and being a young stupid kid, I just assumed that it would be the safest bet. Now, if I was ever in that same situation, I don't know whether the best decision would be leading a drugged up person chasing me back to my house, but I was young and scared. I was so lucky in that moment that my stepfather was home. We were banging on the door, screeching and shouting. He came to the door and shouted at the woman to get off his property, and that she was clearly on drugs and needed to go away. Throughout the whole experience, my friend and her brother were laughing, thinking that it was all fun and games or something. This was so confusing to me, and as soon as my stepfather got rid of the woman, I broke down in tears and thanked him for helping us. I think I was already interested in true crime and stuff like that at that age, so I saw the situation of what it could have become, and they just thought it was funny that a crazy lady was chasing us. Or maybe it was just like a trauma response, like laughing in uncomfortable situations. I still don't know for sure though. My stepfather wasn't the easiest person to live with, but I'm grateful for him being there to protect us, as who knows what would have happened if there was no one at home. This took place 2 years ago. I just recently turned 19. I was a college freshman going to school in a small town in South Louisiana. My parents were the pull yourself up by your bootstraps type. Having done their best to instill the strong work ethic in me growing up, they'd expect me to pay for my own tuition with no help from them whatsoever. Not gonna lie, I was a little annoyed at first. I didn't mind paying my own way, but I was concerned about the impact working all those hours would have on my social life, as I wanted the full college experience. I started working part-time as a waiter at a local seafood restaurant. Shifts were limited, and tips were scarce. My dad recommended supplementing my income through yard work, saying I could use his riding lawnmower and leaf blower. Anyway, I started making pretty good money mowing lawns, managing to snag a few clients through word of mouth. My best friend Blaze was working as a cashier at a local corner store while he attended a nearby college. He happily recommended my lawn care service to any customer or coworkers. I was ecstatic. I was not only making enough money to pay for school, but I even had a little left over to get my beat-up old truck some much-needed repairs. He told me about a guy he worked with at the store, a slightly older guy, mid-20s I believe. His name was Alex. He was quiet, didn't smile much, a bit of a loner type. It didn't matter to me, I was only looking to make cash. He said he needed someone to mow his front and backyard, as he didn't really have the time. He didn't really elaborate to what he did outside of working at the grocery store, but I guessed it wasn't much. So my friend gave me Alex's number. No big deal, right? After all, I was going to give it out to anyone who might have been even the least bit interested in my services. Turns out, that was the start of what would be a year-long nightmare. Alex texted me on Saturday morning, a day after my friend and I had talked. It was pretty cordial and simple. Nothing more than,
"Hey man, what's up? Your friend told me that you cut grass."
I gave him an affirmative, and then asked if he would like me to come over, and how frequently, given how often it rained here in South Louisiana. He simply told me to come over later that day, and that he wasn't sure if he could afford me on a weekly basis. Whatever, I thought. Maybe we could work out some kind of arrangement. I immediately hopped out of bed, got dressed, and drove to where he lived, which was located on the far side of town, across the bayou. His house wasn't located in the nicest of neighborhoods. Many of the houses were run down, seemingly in a state of disrepair. The yards were thick with grass, knee-high length if I remember correctly. I didn't think any of those people could afford to pay me even a quarter of what I charged at the time, which wasn't much, at around $45. I finally made my way to Alex's place, which didn't look all bad compared to the other houses. Horizontal siding painted a soft pastel blue, sat atop dark gray bricks, with a cracked bay window in the front. I parked my truck on the side of the street and shot him a text stating that I had arrived. He came out of his house in a wrinkled t-shirt and pajama pants, looking as if he just woke up. "Hey," I said, smiling as I usually do. "Rough night?" I asked jokingly. He didn't respond, just blinked and ran his hand through his dark blonde hair for what felt like an eternity, but realistically could have been less than a minute. We both stood in complete silence. His dark green eyes bore into me. I avert my gaze, catching sight of a fallen branch that had broken off a large oak tree in his front yard. We had just got hit by a hurricane a few days earlier. "So how'd you guys weather the storm?" I asked, my eyes affixed to the broken branches and scattered leaves. He simply shrugged and said, "Okay." It occurred to me that I might have been speaking to the wrong person. "You're Alex, right? You work with my friend at Village Market?" He nodded. What the fuck was with this guy? I thought. I just kept smiling, as I always did when I would get especially nervous. I told him that I have a lot of clients to get to that day, and that I better get started as soon as possible. He just nodded and pointed to the back gate on the side of the house. He started walking, and I followed. It was a sizable backyard, children's toys scattered almost everywhere. There was a cluttered tool shed next to the fence, far off to the left. I did my best to hide my disgust as I nearly stepped in some dog shit. It was weird. The backyard was like a minefield of dog shit, yet no dog to be found. I brushed the thought away and just went to work. Alex didn't bother me or really interact with me at all that day. He seemed really friendly via text. I just chalked it up to him being really socially awkward, like my friend said. He paid me once I finished mowing his lawn, and then I went on my way. Later that night, he texted me again. He apologized for how he acted, saying that he was just tired from the night before, and that he wasn't sleeping well and under a lot of stress. I replied that I understand completely, and asked him if he needed me next week. He ignored my question, and asked if I could suggest anything from Pelicans on the Bayou, the restaurant where I'd been working. At first I was taken aback by the question. I wasn't sure how he knew I worked there, but then it occurred to me that my friend must have told him. I recommended the battered chicken wings, and he thanked me. We started texting back and forth the next few days. He asked me questions about my life, nothing too personal. He'd make inappropriate jokes, nothing I couldn't handle though. He seemed like a pretty cool guy when we talked via text. Strangely, most of our conversations happened late at night or early in the morning hours on weekends. Again, I didn't mind, because he was a paying customer, and I was a friendly guy. About a month had passed when my friend Blaze had sent me a screenshot of a text he received from Alex. It was supposedly a text sent by me, saying all sorts of horrible things to Alex, like,
"He's a fucking loser who'd never get laid, and needed to get a real job."
Shit like that. I couldn't believe what I was reading. In the fake text, he even threw some homophobic slurs, which offended me greatly since I had a gay uncle that I was really close to. I decided it would be best just to ignore him. This guy was clearly unwell, trying to start shit with someone he barely knew. He texted me a few days later, acting as if he'd done nothing wrong. The text kept coming. He chatted with me like we were longtime friends. My patience grew thin. I finally snapped and messaged him back. "Dude, I know what you did. If you know what's best for you, you'll leave me alone." He feigned ignorance at first, and then proceeded to apologize profusely. I didn't care at that point. I didn't know that guy at all. He was nothing to me. I was busy with my school and work, and I had absolutely no time for any of his drama. I blocked his number. I thought I was over, but I couldn't have been more wrong. A few weeks later, I received another text, this time from a completely different number. It was Alex, again with more apologies. I blocked the number. I figured that he would finally take the hint and leave me alone. He didn't. He ended up adding me on Snapchat using a fake profile. I accepted his request. The name looked familiar, so I thought nothing of it. He asked me if I still worked at Pelican's. I told him that I didn't, as they kept cutting my hours. He then asked if I was still cutting grass. I told him that I was, but for only close friends and family members, as I had a bad experience with a former client. He then proceeds to ask me for details. By then, I figured out it was Alex. I told him to leave me alone, and that if he didn't, I was going to the police. I then received a text from my girlfriend at the time, asking me if I knew a guy named Troy. He supposedly saw me cheating with another girl at some party. I told her everything that was going on. She wasn't sure if she believed me, as I did have a history of playing the field. I told her that I was completely faithful to her, and this guy was fucking nuts. She told me that I better start collecting evidence, taking screenshots of his texts he sent, and that's exactly what I started doing. Most of the texts were pretty benign, just more of him asking me for forgiveness. Then late, one Saturday night, he sent me another text. This time, it was a picture of my house. I was drinking with a few buddies of mine at the time, Blaze included. I immediately showed them the text. He suggested that we call the cops. Some of my more aggressive friends suggested we go outside and beat his ass. I wasn't sure what to do. I didn't really want to get the cops involved, but I certainly didn't want to go outside, not knowing if he had a weapon of some kind. I told everyone to just stay in the house and not to do anything. I peeked through the blinds and saw nothing. He couldn't have been there for long. He must have left as soon as he had taken the picture. I didn't hear from him for a few weeks. Blaze, along with the other two cashiers, asked to not work the same shift with Alex. I was hoping maybe it was finally over. Maybe he moved on to someone else. Then on a cold, early October evening, I came home from class to find my mother shaken. I'd never seen her like that before. I asked her what was wrong. She was speechless, trembling almost. She showed me what she found laying on her front porch. It was a large manila envelope with Instagram pictures of me, with my eyes scratched out and red X's drawn on my face. A chill went down my spine. I don't think I've ever been this afraid in my life. Like I had never known real fear up until that point. My mom insisted that we go to the police. I agreed. She ended up talking to a close family friend who knew the sheriff. A couple of officers came to the house, took our statements, told us that if Alex ever came by again, to call them immediately. I didn't hear from Alex again after that. He was fired from the grocery store. The owner caught him stealing from the register. Life went on. Months went by, and I felt like I could finally breathe again. Then one day, when I was running errands for my mom, I saw Alex standing on the side of the road. He was holding up a clipboard sign, asking for money. He locked eyes with me. They were cold and emotionless. I could feel that familiar shiver creeping up my spine. It was as if everything had come to a complete standstill. After I regained my senses, I sped off, hoping that that would be the last I ever see of him.
All right, y'all, that is my time. Sorry for the technical difficulties. For whatever reason, Blog Talk would not let me unmute myself. But that's neither here nor there. I hope y'all enjoyed the show as well as I did. Make sure y'all join in tomorrow, same time, same place, because you already know it's going to be Day 15. And day 15, you know, is somewhat the halfway mark, not really. But yeah, we in the mid mark of the 31 days of horror. So I hope that y'all continue to tune in. If you're listening to the playback or whatnot, thank you for supporting. Even, you know, if you don't call in and things like that, I just appreciate the love and support through the playbacks as well. But before I get out of here, I'm going to leave y'all with my thought of the night. And my thought of the night is this. sometimes to get things right, you have to start again. There's no shame in it. Only those who focus on how many times you hit the restart button will be the ones that don't really understand the success of your ways. Those people don't belong in your circle. But those who support you and root you on and be your cheerleader as you do restart and knock out all kinks, those are the ones that are supposed to be alive. So cut off those branches because they don't belong, and keep the root, because in keeping the root of your foundation, that's the only time that you have stability in what you're trying to grow. So with that being said, love, peace, and blessings. Pray before you lay. I love y'all, and good night.